You are listening to Pandora's Box Radio with Kalia LaRoche. For more information about my products and services, counseling, coaching, hypnotherapy, books, and audios, please visit narcissismfree.com or pathbacktoself.com.
Today, the topic of our show is blindsided. What happens when we can't see ourselves? We all have blind spots that prevent us from seeing truth in certain situations. Our blind spots can go from mild to severe, and the more severe our blind spots, the more damaging our behavior can be because there's no true ability to see the self or self-reflect. It's often said ignorance is bliss. What we don't know can't hurt us. If we close our eyes to the truth, then perhaps it isn't really true. Truth itself is a big question mark. Truth is subjective. What is true, really? How can we be sure that it is truth? I've heard it said there is your truth, my truth, and the true truth that lies somewhere in between. What is that truth? And why do we so often struggle to see it? This episode's called Blindsided, but I'm not talking about physical sight. I'm talking about insight, sight as seen from within. We all see from different lenses, and we're all entitled to our own views, our own interpretation of what it is that we see. As I sit in my yard, I see an unmanicured lawn and think it is beautiful. But someone else may think it needs to be mowed and weed whacked. I prefer a more wild look. But this is preference, and preference is not the same as truth. If there is a true truth, it must be a universal truth, one that is not open to interpretation or preference, such as the law of gravity. What goes up must come down. If you jump off a tall building, no matter what you believe, you're going to fall down. The law of gravity here on Earth is a true truth. It is true that when you throw something up in the air, it will eventually come back down. We have something called consensus reality or consensus truth, which is a truth that the majority of us would agree upon, but it's really an interpretation. Still, such as the color white. If all English-speaking people got together, the majority would agree that a white T-shirt is indeed white. If someone in the group says it is black, we might consider that person blind. Let's also look at the word love, for example. The English language doesn't have many words for love, but other languages, such as the Spanish language, have lots of words to describe love. If you ask 100 people what love is, you may get 100 different answers, and they all may be right or true. They are all interpretations of the same thing. Let's look at the words right and wrong. It's just a matter of interpretation. If someone's actions or deeds or beliefs are right or wrong, where is the truth in this? Countries go to war to fight for a cause they believe to be right, and the other is assumed wrong, but both countries at war believe that they are right. Six countries may get together and agree that one country is wrong and join forces against that country, who might interpret the attack as persecution and possibly control. A couple going through a divorce may be divided against each other in a war of right versus wrong. The War of the Roses, so to speak, both feel they are right and the other is wrong. Wrong is often interpreted as bad, which is shameful. We need to believe we are right in order to avoid being seen as bad. So right and wrong can also be interpreted as good and bad. Right is good, wrong is bad. Our laws have determined certain actions and behaviors to be wrong and therefore bad and punishable by law, but other immoral acts are not considered illegal, although the majority may interpret those acts as wrong or bad, such as infidelity when a couple has taken an oath of fidelity. This is considered a betrayal of the oath or a lie. And lying is not punishable by law, although the act in which one lies about may be. A sociopathic individual in our society may commit acts the majority would consider immoral and wrong, but these acts are not necessarily punishable by law, such as conning a love interest out of thousands of dollars. One can commit a con, say, with a group of investors, and that act would be punishable by law if proved. However, if that same person swindles someone they're sleeping with, it's viewed differently by the law. So love conning or love fraud is perfectly acceptable by our society's laws. But if you don't have the sexual intimacy, it may be punishable by law. We can't look to our laws as a true indicator of right or wrong, nor can we look at consensus reality as a true indicator. We have to rely upon our own moral compass. And everyone has a different moral compass. So what is right and wrong, really? It is an inner knowing that may or may not be validated by others. That inner knowing is insight. Insight develops awareness. One who has the ability to look within becomes aware. Those who do not have the ability to self-reflect are unaware, perhaps blindsided. But we all have different levels of awareness. One who is awakened is highly aware, and one who is sleeping, as in unconscious of how his or her actions, thoughts, beliefs, and behavior affect his or her own reality, or how one's behavior affects others, that person is considered unaware. We have extremely aware and extremely unaware and everything in between. And the more aware we are, the more awakened we are. I believe it is our true nature to wake up and be aware, because the salvation of our very planet depends upon our growing awareness. Those who are unable to self-reflect are also unable to grow in awareness. Personal and spiritual growth is the path of self-reflection and growing in awareness. It is the path of awakening. It is the path of opening our eyes to the deeper truth of who we are, why we are here, and how we perceive reality. Feelings and awareness go hand in hand. If you're able to feel, to really feel, your feeling self will guide you toward awakening. If you deny or run from your feeling self, you will experience blind-sightedness. When a baby is born, whether it's a baby human or a baby kitten, it takes some time for the sight to develop. And this is physical sight I'm referring to. But just as it takes time for babies to develop sight, it takes time for human beings to develop insight. Unfortunately, the development of insight has become more a spiritual path than a human path. Some of the highest positions in corporation and government are held by people who are blindsided. They only see their personal truth, wants, needs, and desires, rather than the truth of what is in the best interest of humanity. Truly selfish people and selfish interests come from blindsidedness or lack of awareness. Intellect does not equal awareness. A lot of people make this mistake, believing that intellect equals awareness. Someone may have an extremely high IQ, an extremely developed intellect, and still be blind as a bat in terms of conscious awareness. In order to have true insight and awareness, one must also have a strong moral compass. He or she must be able to view the world in terms of how his or her actions affect the whole of humanity. There's a Native American belief where the tribe must consider the effect of the next 7 generations in all of their actions. They're not acting in their own self-interest, but in the interest of the next seven generations, and this is awareness. If someone is more interested in the paycheck he or she will bring home next week, even if the actions behind that check will have a detrimental effect on society, that person is blindsided, unconscious, unaware. Even if that person has a genius mentality that would allow him to mastermind the most sophisticated, deadly weapons known to humanity. You get the picture. We are either growing in awareness or we remain unaware. And just as it is our true purpose to be the light that we have come here to be, it is also our purpose to grow in awareness. The more of us that make it our personal mission to grow in awareness, the more aware we become as a whole. And in our group awareness, we can use that insight to create a world based on the higher laws, the higher truths. Evil itself is a result of blindsidedness. The more evil one's actions and behavior, the more he or she lacks conscious awareness. Even if that person has a plan or a scheme where one is perfectly aware of what he is doing, that awareness comes from lower level consciousness. Higher level consciousness considers that we are all connected through an invisible web, and what one does to another, he ultimately does to himself. So now we come to personal awareness. In order to grow in awareness, we must be willing and capable of looking at our own blindsidedness, and we all have it. We all have blind spots that prevent us from seeing the deeper truth. We need to be willing to look at our blind spots with compassion and even humor. It is not wrong or bad to have blind spots. It is simply unawareness of something. Therefore, we all must be willing to look at our blind spots without self-judgment. If we judge ourselves harshly for being unaware in certain situations, we may continue to close our eyes to the truth for fear of being seen as wrong or bad. Sometimes it is our core shame that keeps us blind because we don't want to see the truth, especially if it hurts. Denial is really another word for blindsided. When we're in denial, we're unwilling to see the truth because it's too painful. Or to see the truth would mean we have to change something in our lives that would take a great deal of effort. For example, the alcoholic who knows on many levels that his drinking is causing he and his family problems, but he has his blinders on because he knows to stop drinking would require great insight and effort. It's easier to keep drinking. If we treat others badly, we may not see what we are doing. Our blinders keep us from seeing the truth because the truth hurts. So if you're controlling, dominating, manipulative, and reactive, you may not see your own behavior because it comes from your fear and insecurity. You may not see how it outpictures in the world. You may not see how your reactiveness hurts others. You may not want to see. Because to get really honest with the self and see one's own blind spots takes courage. It can be really painful. The truth will set you free, but it may hurt first. It appears to be human nature that we project our blindness onto others. Two warring countries are a good example of this. Many of us might agree war itself is wrong and bad and doesn't really solve anything in the long run. It's seen as bad because they do this, and the other country is seen as bad because they do that. What is the true truth? It is likely that we, humanity, are suffering an extreme imbalance, and we need to work together as a whole to come back into balance. Personality disorders develop from unawareness. There's a lot of blindness in an extremely disordered individual. He or she is unable to see the deeper truth. He or she lives in a state of denial in order to continue living in the same way without having to be responsible for his or her own behavior. Even if this is brought to that person's attention, it will be swept under the rug into the invisible web of denial. This is often, once again, due to the deep levels of shame and guilt. In order for one to change, he or she would have to confront their own shame and guilt. And since personality disorders usually involve a great deal of projection, there's more likely to be blame than the acknowledgement of one's own shame. Those who are codependent and stay in relationships where they are put down, invalidated, blamed, and criticized are also blindsided. They can't see how they are being affected by that behavior and hold on to a false belief that this is love, when in reality it's nothing like love. Those of us who get involved and stay involved in a toxic relationship or with a personality disordered individual have some major blind spots. We ourselves are unwilling to see the deeper truth because it would be too painful. And in the end, for most of us who dance this dance, the truth slaps us silly and causes a major eruption in our lives, where the truth spews like volcanic ash all over our lives to the point where it would be impossible to ignore it. I often talk about, in the beginning, we get a whisper and then a shout, and then we get the 2x4 over the head if we didn't pay attention to the whisper or the shout. And this is actually a wake-up call. Wake-up calls can be really devastating. When we ignore all the subtle signs of our inner nature trying to give us truth, the need for a reality check gets stronger and stronger, until we have so much reality hitting us in the face we can hardly bear it. But living from a place of being awake and aware is truly the highest place we can live. So if we find a way to embrace those wake-up calls, we can move towards a more powerful, insightful life. But it might hurt before it heals. Whenever you experience conflict in your life, ask the question, what is it I am unwilling to see in this situation? And then listen for the answer. If you can't see it for yourself, you may need to visit with a good counselor, coach, family member, or friend who may be able to see what you are blind to. Often, we're simply too close to the mountain to see the whole range. Seek and you shall find. Ask and it shall be given. The asking and the seeking refers to our inner awareness. Ask for the awareness. Ask for the answers. Ask your own soul, your own inner God self, your inner wisdom. Ask for truth and be willing to face the consequences of not living according to the deeper truth. Getting help to see the truth is a sign of a willingness to come out of blindsidedness. What is the deeper truth you seek? It is the truth that is in your highest and best interest and the highest and best interest of others. There's no separation. When you do what is in your highest interest, you're also doing what is in the highest interest of others. A bank robber who steals at gunpoint a hefty sum of money from the bank may feel he is acting on his own best interest and the best interest of those he's sharing the money with, but please don't confuse selfishness with the highest interest of all concerned. The robber is likely acting in his selfish interest for selfish reasons. But let's say the same robber has a young child who needs an operation, and he doesn't have the money or resources, and there's nobody out there that's going to help him, and he's tried every single avenue he can possibly go through. So in his desperation to heal his daughter, he robs a bank. Or look at a starving person who robs another in order to provide food for his hungry family. Do we have the right to say this is good, bad, right, or wrong? In this kind of scenario, I would say these kinds of actions are simply showing the imbalance of our society. These kinds of incidences are the leak in the hose of a dysfunctional society. Why couldn't the man whose daughter is sick get the help he needed for his daughter? probably because our dysfunctional society is completely money-driven and is not concerned with the true welfare of others. And the programs that are out there may not be concerned with something like that. And I myself run into a similar scenario with people who contact me wanting my help and unable to pay for it. Society puts me in a position of needing to charge for my services in order to support my livelihood, pay my mortgage and my bills, and if I don't enforce the boundary of exchange of value for services rendered, I would be poor, broke, and unable to function in my own daily life. And in the end, this doesn't help anyone. So it's not in the highest good for all concerned that I give a lot of my time and energy away for free to individuals. I believe it's in the best interest of all concerned that I give my time and energy away in a way that a larger population will be served, such as in the writing of my articles, my books, and doing this radio show. A medical doctor may make a few gestures of charity in his practice to those in grave need, but he's unable to serve everyone in grave need because then he wouldn't be able to support himself and his own family, and he himself would be in grave need. So you see where I'm going with this. There's a balance to be considered. There was a situation recently in L.A. where a police officer in the LAPD, you've probably heard the story of Christopher Jordan Dorner, who was fired from his job for exposing corruption in the police force. The police force obviously wanted officers who turned a blind eye and support corruption rather than moral officers who held others accountable. Well, this scenario went bad. This man initially did what he felt to be the right thing, and he was severely punished for it. He ended up snapping and taking revenge on the corrupt officers and their families, which inevitably resulted in deaths of other people and his own death. Was what he did wrong? Well, the whole scenario was wrong in a sense. It showed the imbalance of our society. Count on being rewarded for doing the right thing anymore. In fact, the greater reward for the individual may be in being corrupt. And this is truly a sad thing. The reward in this kind of situation is not based on the true truth and on the morality or one's moral compass, because initially Christopher Jordan Dorner was following his moral compass. But somewhere in that process, something went very wrong. And he had to experience the reward and punishment system of a corrupt society. We can be really confused about following the law when the law itself is corrupt. So we have to follow moral law according to our own moral compass. And in doing so, many of us may find ourselves up against societal law. Another example would be a mother of a young daughter who realizes her daughter's father has been molesting her, but she can't prove it in court. And so the father is awarded 50% custody of that daughter. The mother must knowingly turn her own daughter over to the hells of child molestation each week, and this is enforced by law. If she took her daughter and fled the country, which may be a moral decision, she can be arrested for kidnapping, and the daughter would be assigned to the father full time. The irony is, it is the parental instinct to provide for one's child and protect that child from harm. But the law very often shuts that down and enforces a rule that goes against what is in the best interest of that child. Women's prisons are filled with women who have killed their physically abusive spouses in order to protect themselves and their children because the law wouldn't take appropriate action. There's a movie out there, The Burning Bed. It's an old one with Farrah Fawcett when she was still alive, which is a good example of this. Although we consider killing wrong, what happens in the case of self-defense, kill or be killed? Is being killed and allowing your own children to be slaughtered considered the worthy act? How could it be? Families have killed to protect their own for ages. And in the case of these women, they had no escape or protection from severe abuse. And if these women didn't kill their abuser and the abuser did mass harm to her children, she might be arrested for failure to protect her children, which has happened before too, where when they discover extreme abuse in a family, they hold, you know, the abused wife responsible for not protecting her children. So she's in a no-win situation. I was recently reading about one woman's experience of a woman. I'm going to read it to you because this kind of drives home the point. She tells her story. They met when she was 24 and he was 27. Dating was wonderful. And after the wedding, things were not so wonderful. She now serves a sentence of life without the possibility of parole for spousal homicide. And here's what she says. Direct attempts on my life. Like when he held me down and choked me, left marks on me. Or I'd wake up in the middle of the night with a gun pointed at my head. Or him sticking a gun in my mouth and threatening to pull the trigger. Digging a hole in our property, telling me it was my grave, and that he wouldn't be guilty of murder because he wouldn't kill me before he put me in it. Threats against my family. When I did manage to get the guts to leave him, I had $3 in my pocket. I went to the bus station, and the bus station wasn't open. I sat around outside the building waiting for the bus to come so I could go in and get a ticket to wherever the money would take me. And the bus didn't come, and it didn't come. And then I heard the truck. I heard the horn honk. He knew I was there. He knew I was there. He always knew everything. He knew everything. He knew what I was thinking. He always knew. He always knew that I was going to what I was going to do before I did it. Outside the bus station, he never said anything to me. He just kept honking the horn until I finally came round. And he went like this with his finger for me to come to him. He took me home and it scared me because he wasn't screaming. He wasn't hollering. He wasn't throwing, and he didn't hit me. I didn't understand that. I understood him hitting me and screaming and yelling, but I didn't understand the silence. We drove home, and we sat in the truck, and I sat there waiting. I kept hoping he would hurry and get out so I could get out. I was not allowed to exit the truck unless he got out first. I had to have permission to leave his presence, or that was insulting him, that was disrespecting him. I sat there waiting and waiting. We must have sat there 20 minutes before he ever uttered a word, and he finally told me, "Next time, I will not come after you." Very calmly, quietly. I thought to myself, he's going to admit that it's over. I said, "Can we get help? You willing to try one more time, and if it doesn't work, you'll let me go?" He said, "I never said I'd let you go." She said, "But you said you wouldn't come after me again." And he said, "Not like this. You'll come back to me begging on your hands and knees for me to take you back." I looked at him and said, "Whatever makes you think that if I managed to get away from you, that I'd come back to you, let alone on my hands and knees?" He turned to look at me, and I saw the evil. And he told me, "Trust me, you'll beg me." He sat and described to me what he would do to my mother, my grandparents. He told me he would continue on with each member of my family until I came to him, begging him to stop. I knew that I would never get away. I believed he was capable of doing what he said he was going to do. I believed it without any doubts. He always did, and everything he said he was going to do to me. The sexual abuse got worse. He started using foreign objects. He used a gun on me rectally, a loaded gun. I remember begging him to pull the trigger so I wouldn't have to suffer anymore. He told me it was too easy. Do you blame that woman for shooting her husband? What was her choice? He could have been arrested, but they would have let him out the next day, maybe 2 days later. And 75% of women in abusive relationships are more likely to be killed after they attempt to leave the relationship. And that threat remains constant for the next couple years after they leave. Many women live as prisoners in their own home and are terrorized on a daily basis. They live under constant threat of being killed. So I want you to know I'm not personally giving my opinion on murder, but I'm talking about the extreme dysfunction in our society and how our laws so often support this dysfunction. Right and wrong is subjective. It really depends on the situation. The more aware we become, the more we tune in to right action. We feel in our soul what the right thing to do is. And the right thing to do may not always align with man-made law. However, it will align with spiritual law. Spiritual law is a higher law than man-made law, and there are times when man-made law must be confronted for its corruptive nature. So let's take a look at some of the more common ways we are blindsided in our daily lives. We don't see the truth about a partner. We don't see the truth because we project our own wants, needs, and desires upon that partner. We don't admit to ourselves how we are energetically dying in a job, in a place that we live, or in a relationship. We don't see how our lifestyle, such as drinking, using drugs, prescription or otherwise, poor dietary choices and overeating, risky sexual behaviors, etc., are affecting us on a mental, physical, spiritual, and emotional level. We don't see our own part in an argument or energetic discord with someone close to us or with a boss or coworker. We don't see our own potential or ability to create something better and more fulfilling in our lives. We don't see our own goodness. Or we don't see our own badness. We don't see our own blocks to intimacy, our blocks to financial abundance, health, and wellness. We don't see our own patterns of behavior. And this is just to name a few. So what can we do to become more awake and aware? We can begin paying close attention to how we feel both emotionally and physically. Your feelings are your inner barometer that alert you to what is really going on, so pay attention. Watch your own tendency to slip into denial and lie to yourself about what's really happening. Be willing to consider that you might very well be the reason something isn't working in your life, be it financial abundance, healthy relationships, right work, good health, and so on. Be willing to reflect on your own hot buttons, your weaknesses, your sensitivities, and other areas that may cause you to be reactive. Watch for where you might be taking responsibility for others and blaming yourself for something that you are not responsible for. Watch where you might be blaming others for something that is your responsibility, such as your own happiness, your lack of motivation, your fears, your childhood wounds, etc. Learn to trust your intuition. This is a biggie. Learn to listen for that inner guidance. Pay attention to your dreams. Dreams often alert us to what is in our unconscious. So pay attention to what the dynamic is. Dreams sometimes aren't what they seem to be. You've got to really listen more to how you're feeling in that dream than the visuals, because the visuals are often not literal. Like when you experience living in a house, but it's not your house. You know, it's more a feeling of, that house could be representative of your consciousness or something else. So pay attention to how you feel in your dreams. acknowledge that it is your highest purpose to awaken to your true self and live your life from a place of conscious awareness. The more consciously you live your life, the more true to yourself you are. And so let's all realize that as we heal our own blindsidedness, as each one of us becomes more awake and aware, we bring that awareness to all of society. We are contributing to humanity's awareness. The more aware we are, the less likely we are to be puppets and robots of society, doing what is expected of us instead of what is right, what is true, and what is necessary. Listen to your intuition, follow the voice of truth, and this truth will set you free. So that sums up my message for today. So thank you for joining me. Take care. Have a good night.